My name is Quinn Fox. I'm Associate Pastor for Discipleship, and all of us here at National are delighted to welcome our guests and our members to what we believe is a very important conversation this morning. Our plan is pretty simple. We want to hear from Greg Smith about some significant changes in the way that Americans describe their religious commitments. And we want to hear some thoughtful reflection on America and religion and how the two intersect and what the implications are from Michael Gerson. And then we want them to have a conversation with each other that we get to listen to, and then we want to join the conversation. 3 hours will pass very quickly. Our friend Michael Cromartie, Vice President of Ethics and Public Policy Center, has graciously agreed to facilitate our objectives as our moderator. Rather than me spending a lot of time going over the impressive credentials of our speakers, we've provided a summary along with a rough outline of where we're headed this morning, including an all-important necessary break that comes at some point in the middle. We realize that there are human needs, and so we have this break. You'll receive guidance at the break as to what's available in the way of refreshments and where the restrooms are, some resources for you that we have for free and for sale. But at this point, before I turn it over to Michael, I'd like to ask Donna Marsh, our Associate Pastor for Serve Ministries, to open our morning in prayer, and then, Michael, you can take it away.
Thank you. Let us pray. Gracious God, our times are in your hands. And this morning we ask that you would open our eyes, open our minds, and open our hearts to understand our times better. We ask that you would help us to see our calling as a community. And we ask that you would bless this community of learners gathered here this morning. We thank you for the gifts, the wisdom, and the experience that our speakers bring to us today. Help us all to rest secure in the knowledge that indeed we are in your hands, our nation is in your hands, our church is in your hands. But we are called to serve in a unique way in these times. Bless this time. Guide and lead us today and always. I pray in the name of my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen. Well, thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Nice to see you again. We did this last year with Dr. Richard Mao and Ross Douthat on civility, and this year we even pick up a more complicated subject. A subject of some of great interest and a difficult one when you hear from Greg Smith on the new data that the Pew Forum has released about less than a year ago. Gregory Smith, I will not, you have your little flyers, I take it, so I will not read back to you what you can read yourself on the bio, but I just would want to tell you that Gregory Smith of the Pew Research Center is one of the most important. Well, here we are. Yes, some people need to see this. One of the most important political demographers of the religious landscape in America today, who you may not have ever heard of. But Greg is a graduate of the University of Virginia, where he got his PhD in government. He is now, he coordinates polling on religion for the Pew Forum and the Pew Research Center. He's an expert on public opinion and on the way different religious groups in America relate to politics in American society. He's got a very informative slideshow for us this morning, and rather than me taking up a lot of more time, I'm really eager for you all to hear Dr. Gregory Smith. Greg, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Let's see. Let me just pull this up here. Well, good morning. Thank you for that very nice introduction. Thank you for the invitation to be here. It's my pleasure, and I've been looking forward to our discussion this morning and to the chance to get to share some of our research with you. And what I'll try to do to kind of kick off the discussion over the next half hour or so is share some of what our research shows about some of the changes that are underway in the American religious landscape. We'll focus in particular on the growth in the share of the population that describes themselves as religious nuns, N-O-N-E-S. I'm Catholic. When I talk to my family about many of these things, they get very confused. But we'll talk about the growth of the nuns, and we'll see that while over the last couple of decades or so, the share of the population that says they have no religion has been increasing, at the same time, the share of the population that describes themselves as Protestants has been declining, to the point where we've now reached the point where the United States really is no longer a majority Protestant country, which I think is a really a key change in over the long course of American history. We'll talk a little bit about what's behind some of these trends with a particular focus on three things: the importance of generational replacement, the degree to which young people are driving these changes. We'll take up the question of secularization. Do these changes indicate that the United States is becoming less religious? It's an interesting question. There's data to suggest that's part of what's going on, but it's not the whole story. And we'll also focus on the importance of religious switching, the frequency with which Americans change religions. And then finally, I'll take a look at a portrait of the nuns. Who are they? Who are they exactly? Why are they nuns? And what are the prospects that they will remain nuns? Or put another way, what are the prospects that they will ultimately become religiously affiliated? So that's what I'll try to accomplish to kick things off. But first, let me say just a few words about the Pew Research Center, about who we are and about what we do. This is very important. We are a nonprofit, nonpartisan, non-advocacy organization. We do not take positions on political issues or in policy debates. We also do not take positions on religious issues. That comes as a surprise to some people who think that our name, the Pew Research Center, refers to a church pew. Maybe you all are familiar with it. In fact, it doesn't. Pew is a family name. It's the name of the Pew family that established the Pew Charitable Trust, of which we are a subsidiary and from which we take our name. It's not an acronym. It doesn't refer to Church Pew. It's a family name. So we don't take positions on religious issues. We also don't take clients, and we don't conduct polling on behalf of other organizations. We're really in kind of a unique position. We're very fortunate to be in a unique position of being an independent research organization with the goal, the mission really, of simply trying to provide good, solid, objective, accurate information that policymakers and journalists and other interested observers can use to understand some of the key issues of the day. We do a lot of different kinds of research, from public opinion polling to demographic research to legal analysis to I have colleagues who focus on trends in religious restrictions all around the world and religious freedom. I focus on public opinion polling, especially as it relates to religion and public life. And I think that there's a lot that public opinion polling can teach us about the state of American religion, beginning with keeping us informed about the key trends in the American religious landscape. These data here, I'll say as well, there'll be a lot of numbers in these presentations, but I'll try to keep the math to a minimum. But they are very illustrative, I think. This chart here shows trends over time in the religious identification of American adults going back about four decades. These data come from the general social surveys, which have been conducted every year or two by the National Opinion Research Center out of the University of Chicago. And what you can see here is that up until up through about the late 1980s. Upwards of 6 in 10 American adults consistently described themselves as Protestants. Somewhere between 6 and 10 to 2/3 of the American public was Protestant. But beginning in the early 1990s, those numbers began to decline, and they've steadily continued to decline ever since then, until we've reached the point where we are now, where about half of American adults describe themselves as Protestants. Over the same period of time, look at what's happened in that bottom line to the nuns, people who say they have no religion. Up through the late 1980s or so, surveys consistently found that only about 7 or 8% of American adults said they had no religion. But beginning in the early 1990s, that number began to rise. I think you could even say it began to skyrocket. We don't really see this kind of change over this short a period of time in this kind of key measure very often. Today, we find that 1 in 5 American adults are religiously unaffiliated. That means that the share of the population that's religiously unaffiliated has more than doubled in the span of just a couple of decades. Notice as well that middle line there. I won't focus too much on this in this presentation, but that shows what's been going on with Catholicism at a very high level. You see that the share of the population that's Catholic over this period of time has held quite steady. About a quarter of American adults consistently describe themselves as Catholic. Now that apparent stability masks very real changes, very substantial changes that are underway within American Catholicism, and we can talk some about that if you're interested in our discussion. So this is what we've seen happening over the long term. I think it's very interesting in our own data that these trends are apparent, perhaps even accelerating, even over the very short term. These data come from surveys we've conducted just over the last 5 or 6 years or so. And you can see there that just since 2007, the share of Americans who are Protestants has declined noticeably. We've now reached the point in our surveys where fewer than half of American adults are Protestants. That is a fundamental change. If you think, you know, I think back to when I was in high school and first beginning to learn about kind of sociology and demography and what is the makeup of the United States. The United States is a majority Protestant country. The United States is a Protestant nation. Not anymore. Fewer than half of American adults now describe themselves as Protestants. One interesting thing about this slide that I'll point out, you know, I think we're all familiar with the idea that over the long term, over the last many decades, much of the decline in American Protestantism has been located in the Protestant mainline. And over this period of time, evangelicalism has been holding its own or perhaps even growing. But these data show that in the recent past, we see declines both within American evangelicalism and within the Protestant mainline. It's affecting now both groups within Protestantism. Notice as well that over this same period of time, the growth in the nuns has, if anything, accelerated. In surveys we conducted in 2007, we were finding that about 15% of adults were religiously unaffiliated. Since then, that's grown by 5 points. We now find that 1 in 5 adults are religious nuns. Notice something, though, about this slide. Notice that the bulk of the nuns are people who describe their religion as nothing in particular. They are not self-described atheists and agnostics. This is an important point. You'll sometimes hear the nuns equated or conflated with non-believers or described as secular. And that is a mistake. That is not the case. Only a minority of the nuns are atheists or agnostics. The bigger part of them, the much bigger part of them, are people who aren't anti-religious. They're not a-religious. They simply aren't affiliated. They simply aren't associated with any particular religious group. And I'll talk more about that and the importance of what that means going forward. One thing that's really interesting and that's important to point out is that these trends that we're seeing, particularly the growth of the nuns, are demographically quite broad-based. This is part of what makes it hard to point to any one single explanation that's driving all of these changes. This is really a widespread phenomenon. You see here that over the last 5 or 6 years, we've seen significant growth of the nuns among both men and women. You see it among both those who are college graduates as well as among those who have less education. You see it among the rich and the poor. You see it, I think this is fascinating, in every region of the country. Even in the South, which is traditionally the most religious area of the country, we see growth in the ranks of the nuns. So this is a demographically quite broad-based change. However, there are two very interesting components of this that should be pointed out. Number one is that at least recently, at least since 2007 or so, this growth has been restricted to whites. The share of whites who say they are religious nuns has jumped by 5 percentage points just since 2007. But over that same period of time, we've seen no statistically significant growth in the ranks of the nuns among African Americans, and we've seen absolutely no growth among Hispanics. So this phenomenon does, at least over the short term, appear to be restricted to whites. It's also restricted to people who are not married. Today, about 14% of married people say they are religious nuns, and that's identical to what we saw back in 2007. But among those who are unmarried, fully one quarter are now religiously unaffiliated, and that is substantially higher than what we saw even just 5 or 6 years ago. So how can we understand these changes? What can we point to as driving forces that are behind these important changes? And here, I think there's a lot of things we could talk about, but I want to focus on three aspects of this. Generational replacement, first. The question of whether or not this reflects secularization, second. And then third, the importance of religious switching. So let's start with generational replacement. This is a very basic chart. It just shows the religious affiliation or lack thereof, as the case may be, by age. And what you see here is that young people are much less religiously affiliated. They're much more likely to be nuns as compared with their elders. Among adults under the age of 30, 3 in 10 are religious nuns. Among adults in their 30s and 40s, 2 in 10 are religious nuns. And among adults over the age of 65, just 1 in 10 are religious nuns. So there's a real generational component to this. Now, this raises an obvious question. Could these young people, as they get older, as they move through the life cycle, become religiously affiliated? Isn't it the case that as people get married, settle down, have children, isn't it the case that as people grow and mature that they become more religious? That's a fascinating question. I think the conventional wisdom is that they do. And there are some ways in which that is true. Prayer is a good example of that. This chart shows trends over time in the share of Americans who say they pray every day by generational cohort. So the top line there looks at members of the greatest generation, those born before 1928. The second line, the yellow line, looks at members of the silent generation. I want to focus on the third line there, baby boomers. The third line, sort of the brown one there in the middle. If you look back at polling done in the early 1980s, of baby boomers, this is when they were in their 20s and 30s, about half of them said that they pray every day. As baby boomers have gotten older, as they got married, had children, settled down, they began to pray more. Steadily, they began to pray more. Where we've reached the point today, now that baby boomers are entering retirement age, two-thirds of them say that they pray every single day. You see the exact same pattern in the blue line there among Generation X. In the late 1990s, when members of Generation X were just entering adulthood, about 4 in 10 of them said that they pray every day. Today, with members of Generation X having reached their 30s and 40s, 6 in 10 say that they pray every day. So people do become more prayerful. They pray more as they get older. It's hard to know why this might be the case. It might be that as people get older and begin to deal with some of the struggles, aches, and pains of aging, that they become more prayerful. It could be that as people begin to face their own mortality, that they become more prayerful. One of my colleagues points out that our data show that there's been a real increase in recent years in the number of young adults moving home to their parents' basements. That could drive people to become more prayerful as they get older. So there's any number of things that could be driving this change, but it's indisputable. The generations do become more prayerful as they get older. And in that sense, the data suggest people do become more religious as they get older. However, while there's some ways in which people seem to become more religious as they age, religious affiliation is absolutely not one of those ways. And you can see that in this chart. This chart is similar to the last one. It looks at generational cohorts over time. But now we're looking at the percentage of each generation who says they are religious nuns. Notice, first of all, there's several things to point out about this chart. First, look at the top line, that sort of greenish line there. That's the youngest generation. Those are millennials. Notice how unaffiliated they are. They are much more likely to be nuns than their elders. They're the highest on the chart because they're the most likely to be nuns. So that's the first thing to point out. Notice as well that each successive generation is less likely to be unaffiliated. But the other thing to point out, and probably the more important thing, is look at how flat all of these lines are. Unlike this chart, where the lines are all sloping upward toward more religious, toward greater religious commitment, on this chart, the lines are all flat. Look again at baby boomers, the brown line there in the middle. In the late 1970s, when baby boomers were just entering adulthood, 13% of them were religiously unaffiliated. Today, now that they are reaching retirement age, 15% are religiously unaffiliated, virtually identical. There has been no change whatsoever as baby boomers have aged in terms of the share of them who are religiously affiliated. You see the exact same thing for every other generation on this chart. So while it's true that people do tend to become more religious in some ways as they age, that's not true across the board, and it's definitely not true with respect to religious affiliation. So young people today are not only less religiously affiliated than their elders, they are also less religiously affiliated than any previous generation of young people has ever been, as far back as we have scientific survey data. And there is absolutely no reason to think, if past is precedent, that they will become more religiously affiliated as they get older. Now, past isn't always precedent. We're not in the business of making predictions about the future. Far be it from me to try to do that. But if past is precedent, there's nothing here to lead us to think that they're going to join religious organizations in large numbers as they get older. Another obvious question that we often get about the rise of the nuns is, well, does the growth of the nuns suggest that secularization of the kind we've seen in Europe over the last many decades, is secularization underway in the United States? Is this an indication that secularization is underway in the United States? Here again, we've got kind of some conflicting data, but there are some indicators on which the United States does appear to be becoming less religious. The bottom line on this chart is a little hard to see, but the bottom line on this chart shows the percentage of Americans who say they seldom or never attend religious services. Seldom or never. That number has ticked up over the past decade. Not by a huge amount, but it is a significant amount. It's noticeable. It's we can be confident that it's a real change and not just noise attributable to sampling error. We've now reached the point where about 3 in 10 American adults say they seldom or never attend religious services. We see the same kind of thing here. We've asked people, going back 25 years now, this question: do you agree or disagree with this statement? I never doubt the existence of God. When we first started asking that question in the late 1980s, about 9 in 10 Americans agreed with it. They said, I never doubt God's existence. When we asked that question last year, we still found a big majority saying they never doubt God's existence, but it had declined by about 10 points. We've now reached the point where about 8 in 10 American adults say they never doubt God's existence. So there are some indicators that the United States is secularizing, is becoming less religious. Of course, there's a but. The but is that there are also other indicators of American religion that are quite stable. When we ask people, for example, how important is religion in your life? The number of people who tell us it's very important has been quite steady in recent years. We find the same kind of thing when we ask people, is prayer an important part of your daily life? 3/4 of people tell us that it is. That's identical to what we saw in the late 1980s. We also know, and it's also indisputable, that the United States is a highly religious country, certainly when compared with other industrialized democracies. So while it's true that secularization may be underway on some measures, that's not true across the board. And part of what you are seeing in the growth of the nuns isn't necessarily secularization, but rather people seem increasingly to be describing their religious affiliation in terms that more closely match their level of religious involvement or religious commitment, as the case may be. Here's what I mean by that. This chart shows the percentage of people who say they are religious nuns broken down by the frequency with which they say they attend religious services, which is our key indicator of how religious someone is or is not. Look at the top line. I realize it's a little hard to see there, but the light blue line at the top looks at people who tell us that they seldom or never attend religious services. Back in 2007, about 38% of people who say they seldom or never attend religious services describe themselves as religious nuns. Over the last 5 or 6 years, that number has skyrocketed. We have now reached the point where among those who seldom or never attend religious services, about half describe themselves as religious nuns. All right? Notice the two lines at the bottom. Those are people who attend religious services more often. Those lines, by comparison, are quite flat. I mean, look at those who attend religious services weekly or more. Virtually all of them say they are associated with one religion or another. Now, that's obvious in some sense. Of course, people who are going to church every week are going to say that they describe themselves as Protestants or Catholic or Jewish or something. They're not the nuns. But the important point about this slide is that over this period of time, when those who seldom or never attend religious services have increasingly become nuns, the number of people who seldom or never attend religious services really hasn't changed. It's not that there are fewer people attending church. It's that the people who don't attend church and didn't attend church to begin with are increasingly describing themselves as nuns. This answers a question that I get fairly often from pastors. You know, the data show that there's this huge growth in the rise of the nuns. But my congregation is thriving. My congregation isn't shrinking. I'm not seeing fewer people in the pews every week. These two things are not contradictory. It's because the people who are becoming nuns weren't in church to begin with. They were sort of the marginally affiliated, the nominally affiliated to begin with. So while secularization might be taking place, and that might be part of the story, the other part of the story, and an important part of the story, is that those people who weren't very religious to begin with are now describing themselves in those terms more forthrightly when we say, "What is your religion?" The last factor behind this change that I want to point to, and it's not, I should point out that these factors, generational replacement, secularization, these aren't mutually exclusive. These are all, each of these things is part of what's going on. But the last thing I would point out is religious switching. Religious switching in the United States is very, very common. Our surveys show that something like one quarter of American adults currently have a religion, or no religion, as the case may be, that is different than the faith in which they were raised. About a quarter of American adults have a religion that's different than the faith in which they were raised. Now, if you add to that number, that number doesn't even include switching within Protestantism between denominations. If you add to that number switching between Protestant denominations, it goes all the way up to 44%. If you add to that number people who say that they have switched at one point in their lives but have since switched back to their childhood religion, we sometimes refer to these folks as reverts, the number goes up to north of 50%. So religious switching in the United States is very common. And you can see on this chart that the religiously unaffiliated, the nuns, are the single biggest winners, so to speak, in terms of numbers, in the process of religious switching. 7% of American adults, only 7% of American adults, say that they were raised as religious nuns. 13% of American adults say they were raised in a religion and have since become nuns. Notice as well that this works both ways. Most people, half of people at least, who were raised as nuns have since become something. So this switching does cut in both directions, but nuns have three converts, so to speak. There are three people who have become nuns for every one who has left the ranks of the nuns. So religious switching is a third key factor that is behind these changes. And we can talk more about religious switching if you'd like in our discussion. Some of the religious switching as it pertains to Protestantism and Catholicism is also quite interesting and quite important for understanding trends in American religion. So we've documented some of the key trends in American religion. We've talked a little bit about what's behind those trends. We've seen that the growth of the nuns is an important development within American religion. I want to wrap up by taking a closer look at the nuns. Who are they? Why are they nuns? And what are the chances that they'll become religiously affiliated? This refers back to a point I made earlier, but it's important to drive home. Most nuns tell us that their religion is nothing in particular. Only a minority of nuns, about 3 in 10, describe themselves as atheist or agnostic. This is a very important point because I often see the mistake made in the media and elsewhere where nuns are conflated with non-believers. You'll see them referred to as non-believers. You'll see them referred to as seculars. I mean, you'll sometimes even see them referred to as atheists. And that's not true. It's a mistake to think of the nuns as holy, W-H-O-L-L-Y, non-religious. It's a mistake to think of them as completely and unanimously secular. To be sure, they are less religious than other groups, but some of them are in fact religious. And you can see that here. When we ask people, we ask this question a lot, how important is religion in your life? 14% of nuns and 19% of those who say their religion is nothing in particular nevertheless tell us that religion is very important in their lives. And even more tell us that religion is somewhat important in their lives. This chart looks directly at the question of belief. Look at the second set of bars there. Two-thirds of nuns tell us that they believe in God. I mean, I don't know how else to disprove the point that this is not a group that consists entirely of non-believers. Two-thirds tell us they believe in God. Now, they're less certain about that belief than other groups, no question about it. They have more doubts. But nevertheless, these are, in large part, believers. These are people who, even though they are not associated with any particular religious group, nevertheless, many of them do have a religious or a spiritual pulse. That's the first thing I want to point out about nuns. Don't make this mistake that is commonly made. But there's another mistake that I also see made from time to time, less often, but I do see it made from time to time. And in some ways, it kind of flows from this. I think people sometimes, if they realize, okay, it's a mistake to think of nuns as secular, it's a mistake to think of them as non-believers, well, that must mean that they are alternatively religious. Or it must mean that they're out there just sort of waiting to be mobilized, looking for the religion that's right for them, and are just outside the doors of the church waiting to be brought in. That is also false. This chart looks at some of the kind of what can be thought of as alternative religious beliefs we've asked about over the years. I mean alternative in the sense that to the extent that the United States remains a majority Christian country, these are beliefs that fall outside of the realm of kind of traditional Christian teaching. You can see that there are large numbers of nuns who tell us that they believe in spiritual energy located in physical things like mountains and trees and crystals. Large numbers of nuns tell us that they believe in astrology and in reincarnation, that people can be born again and again in this world. Significant minorities of nuns do hold these beliefs, but not at numbers that are any greater than what we see among the public as a whole. Lots of Christians, lots of Catholics, lots of Protestants tell us that they hold these beliefs as well. So these are not characteristic. These are not distinctive of nuns. This is another really interesting finding. In a poll we conducted last year, we asked everyone, including nuns, how important is it to you to belong to a community of people who share your values and beliefs? Only 28% of nuns told us that that's very important to them. That's far below what we see among the public as a whole and certainly compared with other religious groups. So these are people who are perfectly content not being part of a community of shared believers. This is one of my favorite questions we have ever asked. We asked it for the first time and the only time last year. I hope we can repeat it again going forward to keep track of how it changes over time. We asked people who said that their religion is nothing in particular. Put aside atheists and agnostics for a moment. Just those who are nothing in particular. And we asked them directly, Would you say that you are just looking, or I don't think we use the word just. We said, would you say that you are looking for a religion that's right for you, or is this something that you are not doing? 90% of them told us they're not doing this. These are folks who aren't out there looking for a religion. These are folks who aren't looking for a community of shared believers. These are folks who tell us, not only am I not affiliated, but I don't really feel like I'm missing anything by virtue of not being affiliated. So these are kind of the twin errors that I see made when people think about the nuns. On the one hand, it's a mistake to think of them as non-believers. By and large, they're not. They're not against religion. They're not anti-religion. Despite all of the books by outspoken atheists, and you know, you see a lot of attention to that in popular media, that's not this group. But that also doesn't mean that they're just out there waiting to be mobilized, waiting to be incorporated. Most of them tell us that they're just not particularly religious, and furthermore, they don't feel the need to be religious. They don't feel the need to be part of a community of shared belief. They are perfectly content just exactly where they are. Why do people tell us they have become nuns? This is another question we've asked over the years. And I think this is very consistent with what we just talked about. When we ask people why they left their childhood religion, the number one reason we get is, well, you know, I just gradually drifted away. There's no precipitating event. There's no single motivating factor. It's an organic process. It's a gradual process. It's an evolution of sorts. And this is very consistent with what we just saw. There's no one thing we can point to as the there. This is something that gradually happens over time. Now, many people also tell us that they stopped believing in their religion's teachings. Maybe they still believe in God, but they found some of the specific teachings of their childhood religion harder and harder to accept as they got older. Many also tell us that their spiritual needs were not being met. And there's a variety of other reasons that people offer for having left their childhood religion and having become nuns. We also know that there are some very specific complaints, let's say, that nuns have about religious organizations and religious institutions. There's a lot that they think religious organizations do well. There's a lot of contributions they think religious organizations make, but they also have some specific complaints. 7 in 10 nuns tell us they think religious organizations are too concerned with money and power. 2/3 think they think that religious organizations focus too much on rules. And 2/3 tell us that religious organizations are too involved with politics. Now, this brings me to an idea that many of you are probably familiar with, a hypothesis you're probably familiar with. This is Putnam and Campbell's hypothesis, Haldon Fisher's hypothesis, that part of what is behind the rise of the nuns is the increasing association of religion with right-wing politics, the association of religion with conservative politics. The idea here is that as you had the growth in the 80s and 90s of the religious right and the conservative Christian movement, as you had religion increasingly becoming associated with right-wing politics, people who don't share those politics increasingly said, hey, if this is what religion is about, then forget it. If this is what it means to be religious, if this is what it means to be affiliated with a religious group, then that is not for me. That's the hypothesis. I have some questions about the hypothesis. Our data can't prove that that hypothesis is correct. We also can't prove that it's not correct. But there are some indicators that that is part of what's going on. And one of those is the very strong liberalism and democratic partisanship of the nuns. Check out this chart, which shows trends over time in presidential voting among the religiously unaffiliated. Last year, in 2012, 7 in 10 nuns voted for Barack Obama. And in 2008, 75% of them voted for Barack Obama. So this is a heavily Democratic group. This is a very important point. This right here is a key feature of the religion and politics connection in the United States that is often overlooked. I think very, very often when we think about religion and politics, when you think about religion and politics, what do you think of? Evangelicals, right? Think religion and politics, you think the importance of evangelical Christians and strong support for Republicans among evangelical Christians. And that's certainly true. Evangelicals are perhaps the core constituency of the Republican Party today. But this is the flip side of it. And this sometimes gets ignored, I think. The nuns have voted almost as strongly Democratic in recent elections as evangelicals have voted Republican. So the connection between religion and politics overall would be much less pronounced, let's say, if you didn't have this strong support for Democrats among the nuns kind of holding down the other end of the spectrum with evangelicals on the other end of it. We see this liberalism extending to attitudes about social and political issues. 7 in 10 religious nuns tell us that they think abortion should be legal in all or most cases. And 3/4 tell us that they support same-sex marriage. This makes them much more liberal as compared with the population as a whole. And then finally, and this shouldn't come as any surprise at this point, we see nuns telling us that they have real reservations about too much religion and politics. Only 1/3 of nuns say they think it's important for the president to have strong religious beliefs. Most Americans agree with that statement. 7 in 10 Americans as a whole say it's important for the president to have strong religious beliefs. Not the nuns. They think that doesn't matter. Big majorities of nuns, 2/3, tell us that churches should keep out of politics altogether. They shouldn't express their views on social and political matters. And 3/4 of nuns are opposed to having churches come out in favor of one candidate over another during elections. Now, they share that in common with religious people. That's something that that both those who are religiously affiliated and those who are unaffiliated can agree on. But nevertheless, you do see here a real reticence about seeing politics and religion become too intermingled. And I do think that that's consistent with the idea that politics could be part of what is driving this growth of the nuns. So I'm going to stop there. I hope this has been helpful. I hope at least some of it has been new. I hope it's been informative. If I could sum up and leave you with just a few takeaways, I think they'd be that the growth of the nuns is one of the key trends, perhaps the key trend, in the American religious landscape over the last couple of decades. And seeing what happens with it going forward is going to be one of the key things to watch in American religion moving forward. There are a number of factors behind these trends. They include generational replacement. They include secularization along with an increase in people's an increase in the inclination of people to describe their religion in terms that more closely match their level of religious involvement. And they include religious switching. That's another key part of what's going on here. And then finally, we need to remember that we don't want to overgeneralize about the nuns. We don't want to make the mistake of conceptualizing of them as non-believers and as completely secular. But we also don't want to make the mistake of thinking about them as standing right outside the door, waiting to be incorporated, waiting to be mobilized. Many of them just aren't very religious, and they tell us it's not that much more complicated than that. They're happy where they are. They don't feel like they're missing anything by virtue of their lack of affiliation. I'll stop there, and I'll look forward to our discussion.
Thank you, Greg. Well, if you're like me, you just heard a presentation on some of our relatives. I was just thinking of them, and you just described them to a T. Greg, you leave us some real challenges for the church community here, and I thank you for it. Your presentation recalls to mind David Brooks' book, Bobos in Paradise. Bobo stands for bourgeois bohemians. Many of you are Bobos. You don't know it, but you are. And in his book on the spiritual life, in his chapter on the spiritual life of Bobos, he describes these people. The spiritual life of Bobos is kind of a New Age spirituality. These are people who believe in what he calls flexodoxy. They want to shape and form their own faith. Thank you very much. So they believe in flexodoxy. It is a real honor and privilege to have with us today Michael Gerson, who, as you all know, is a twice-weekly columnist for the Washington Post. Before that, he was the chief speechwriter for President George Bush. Michael's also co-authored a book called City of Man, Religion and Politics in a New Era, and the book is for sale out here in the lobby. So help yourself to that book. I would also mention that through my own work, I got to know the late Christopher Hitchens through a program I run with journalists. And Christopher Hitchens once said to me in a private conversation, Michael Gerson is the best literary stylist writing in the pages of the Washington Post. So quite a compliment from a man like Christopher Hitchens, who was also a great literary stylist. Michael, it's great to have you here. Thank you for coming. You want to sit or stand?
No, I'll sit because I'm just going to react to some of these themes and try to, before we get into a discussion. I want to thank Greg for a really eye-opening presentation. This is just, you know, groundbreaking material. It's hard to exaggerate how much those of us in the pundit and journalistic class depend on Pew. Basically, because there's so many sources of information that are biased sources of information, and Pew really isn't. This is just the facts. It's essential to our informed discourse on these issues. I'd also like to thank, you know, Mike for doing this today. He could convince me to come out on a Saturday morning and talk for 3 hours about the sociology of religion, but he could not convince me to wear a tie, so I'm not going to... If you're looking at the recent intersection between religion and politics, there's a lot of change going on, and it can be disorienting. In this last presidential election, during the 2012 GOP primaries, we had a pre-Vatican II Roman Catholic, Rick Santorum, who was mainly supported by evangelicals. We had a former Mormon bishop, Mitt Romney, who won Ohio and Michigan, and thus the nomination, because of Catholic support. That was the reason that Romney won the nomination. And you had a significant portion of Republican voters who viewed the president, who has publicly affirmed the resurrection of Christ, as a closet Muslim. So there's a lot of foment around these issues. It's a lot of unexpected elements of religion and politics. I'm going to reemphasize a couple of the points that Greg makes and kind of maybe expand on them in the context of politics just a little bit. He has located a sea change moment in American life in 2012, when America ceased to be a majority Protestant country. And you see that reflected in our institutions, by the way. In the history of the U.S. Supreme Court, for example, 3/4 of all Supreme Court justices have been Protestants. And now, I think, there are no Protestants on the Supreme Court. I don't know where Clarence Thomas goes to church every Sunday, but he's Catholic in background, although I think he has attended evangelical kind of services. But there are no Catholics on the court. Protestants on the court, and that is a, you know, that's a pretty extraordinary thing, and it's also a kind of psychic adjustment for evangelicals. That's the background that I come from, to see these trends, because beginning in the 50s, we viewed ourselves as the revival movement, the movement of the future, and mainline Protestantism as in decline. And then it just requires a psychic adjustment to say, well, no, actually, we're in slightly less decline than the mainline. That has political implications as well. Greg mentioned this point about Catholicism holding steady, but those are politically charged changes going on there. Because about half of all Catholics younger than 40 years old are Latino in America. And that is a profoundly consequential political fact that one party seems to understand and the other one doesn't seem to understand at all right now. And the group that has swelled, as we've said, is the nuns, close to 20% of the population. Whiter, younger, and as noted, this is complex. One of the figures that that Greg didn't point to in that was up on the chart is, I'm not sure that this is a politically or a particularly theologically sophisticated group of voters, because you had 9% of atheists and agnostics reporting themselves to be absolutely convinced in God's existence, which is both a defiance of dogma and the dictionary, as far as I can tell. So what we're seeing, as was pointed out, is not necessarily secularization, but a radical disassociation from institutional religion. And that is that's not the same as European secularization, but it's a very significant change. Greg mentioned there are disagreements about causes. I've heard Robert Putnam very strongly make the case that this is a reaction to a form of religious engagement, the religious right of the 1990s, at least in large part. And obviously, in the polling, the nuns do take a very dim view of religious conservatives, asserting that churches are too oriented towards rules and money, and essentially making the argument, if this is religion, I'm not particularly interested. If this is true, I'm not sure that evangelicals are helping very much right now. The quality of evangelical political engagement in the last election was absolutely abysmal. Michelle Bachmann and Rick Perry practice a transparent form of ideology or identity politics, asking support of religious people from their own just because they were religious. And really reducing the evangelical tradition to a pathetic caricature defined by support for school prayer and, in Bachmann's case, conspiratorial opposition to vaccines. They often talked ignorantly about America as a Christian nation, and then when they stumbled and lost support, hinted darkly that the real reason was anti-religious persecution. It was behavior, really, of Jerry Falwell on his bad days, and Americans are right to find it discrediting. But there does seem to be something deeper going on here. People in America used to identify themselves as cultural Protestants, cultural Catholics, and cultural Jews. If you go to the Normandy Cemetery, every single stone is a cross or a Star of David, and that's the way that that Americans used to identify themselves. And I think that is really what's fading. There's more disinhibition when it comes to identifying people's true views. And so they're less affiliated with the religion in their minds and habits. And I think it's fair to say that this declining association with religious institutions has happened at the same time that we're seeing declining trust in most institutions in America, with the exception of the military, by the way, over time. But if you look at the standing of government and business, they're also falling and actually are lower levels than the church in many ways. And so I think you can make the case that Americans may be less affiliated with religious organizations because they have grown generally more individualistic and skeptical of authority, and that this is a broader trend than just the rejection of theology or rejection of a certain form of political engagement. As pointed out, it's easy to overstate this trend. America is still not Europe, where you have, you know, where you have secular funerals are common, which are not common in America, where you have half of Europeans say they have never attended a religious service, which is not close to the American model. If you look at the way that American religious identification clusters, Americans have about the same level of religious commitment as does Latin America. Putnam gave me a quote for a column I did once where he said, the average American is slightly more religious than the average Iranian. But the shift we see is meaningful. While the number of the devout has remained pretty steady over time, people in the religious middle are no longer identifying with the organizations and values of the devout. Okay? And this may not be secularization, except at the edges, but it is polarization. Institutional religion has gained a larger number of self-conscious critics in American life. And these changes are playing out in American politics. So as noted, about 70% of nuns voted for Obama in this last election. They're more liberal on same-sex marriage and abortion. But it's the decisive fact here is that nuns are now the largest religious category in the Democratic coalition. About 24% of Democrats and Democratic-leaning voters in America. This causes tension within the Democratic Party, because its second largest religious component is African-American Protestants, who are among the most religious groups of Americans. Okay? And so it's not clear how welcome religious groups will feel in a changing Democratic Party, and not just African-Americans, but progressive Catholics and liberal Protestants oriented towards social justice and liberal evangelicals, which are kind of an interesting group of people, how welcome they will feel as democratic ideology becomes both more secular and more secularizing. And we've seen some of those debates when it comes to religious liberty issues within healthcare reform and other things, where those tensions are very real within that coalition. But the main tensions are between the parties. Religious conservatives remain the largest constituency of the Republican Party. So America is moving in the direction, it hasn't reached that point, but is moving in the direction of having one more secular party and one more religious party, bringing polarization to new levels of intensity in American life. This is becoming a dangerous source of social division in which each side views the other as pagans or theocrats. And there is no contempt like the contempt of the true believer or the militant skeptic for one another. So both parties have a very complex task in this. Democrats must galvanize the nuns while not massively alienating religious voters, particularly in ethnic communities, which, by the way, is precisely what Barack Obama did in his two election victories. He did this quite successfully. Republicans must maintain their base in the pews while appealing to the young, which is have a very different set of approaches and values on this, a task they have not even begun to figure out. And one of their main tasks running going forward. Now, I'm not sure anyone should be really happy with these trends. those cheering religious disaffiliation need to recognize there are broader social consequences to this. The rise of nuns is symptomatic of the decline of many forms of belonging and community in America. And it's associated in these numbers, for example, with the decline of marriage as a primary fundamental form of social affiliation and belonging in our society. And I think the figures are clear, and some people dispute it, but I think the figures are clear that the unaffiliated people, radically disconnected from institutions, they donate less to charity. They provide fewer volunteer hours. They join fewer volunteer organizations. Individualism can quickly become atomization, isolation, loneliness. And whatever else you may think of the communitarian creeds in their various forms, they help create community. And I don't think that religious people in all this, as on the other side of this debate, should despair. I understand that these numbers maintain, on disaffiliation, maintain pretty stable over a lifetime. But it's worth pointing out that they have changed in the context of centuries in American history. They're not completely static, and not just on the downward side. So historians of religions point out that at the time of, for example, the American Revolution, institutional religion was in deep trouble in America. And maybe, although it's hard to tell, but maybe about a fifth of Americans were church members in that period. And around the Civil War, it was around a third. And then at the height, it was more than half in America. And over this period of very rapid social and economic change in America, Methodists, Baptists, and Pentecostals found ways to attract and cultivate members over time. It's not unprecedented in American history. We also live in a time of rapid economic and social change. And the real question out here, which is not an easy one, is whether religious institutions can find a way to appeal in a nation of individualists. And that's not easy. But I do believe that communities of faith have some inherent advantages in these arguments. The disaffiliated in America may not feel they're missing much. In fact, they are. There is little enduring appeal to a culture of the nowhere man making all his plans for nobody, to quote the Beatles. But there is an enduring appeal of faith, hope, and community, which must now be translated somehow in our time.
Always good to get a Beatles quote into any kind of conversation. We have time before the break for these two gentlemen to engage one another. I'm wondering, Greg, in light of Michael's response, if you have anything to add, and if you don't, I do. Let me just interrupt there at this point. And I will ask you this, because Michael cited it. How in the world does Robert Putnam of Harvard have any survey data on the religiosity of people in Iran?
Well, right.
How do you get surveys done?
You haven't seen our new survey of Iran? I'm serious.
Well, no, I haven't, and I'm eager to hear about it, but I'm just curious, how in the world do you get a survey done in a closed society where...
No, I know, I think it's...
get an honest answer from anybody.
Right. I think it's hard, but I have seen over the years surveys that have been done in Iran. I think people have tried calling in from outside or...
Or through the Internet?
Or through the Internet and cell phones, so I'm not sure exactly. I also don't know...
Have you done a survey on Iran, though, really?
I don't... I focus on our domestic work.
Okay.
We just did a major survey of majority Muslim countries around the world.
Okay.
I don't know if Iran was included or not, but we could look and see. But my understanding of Iran is that we have done studies of Muslim Americans, and in doing that, I have spoken with people familiar with Iran, and my understanding is that while obviously there is a very religious population there, including the population that runs the country, I've always understood there to be substantial numbers of people there who don't fall into that category. And in fact, if you look in the United States, this is getting a little off target, but if you look at Muslims in the United States, those who are of Iranian descent tend to be among the least religious Muslims in the United States. And it's because of the history of Iran, when in the revolution, that they are the ones, by and large, who came to the United States. So I don't know if... So I don't know quite how to where the data come from or what to make of it. But one thought that did occur to me, and I haven't thought of this in this way, it's very interesting, is the idea of the growth of the nuns being another example of polarization. Political polarization, religious polarization. But you know, one thought that strikes me about that is that I think one of the things, I don't have hard data for this, but I think it's suggested in the data. I think one of the things that's going on over the long term in American society is that it is becoming more acceptable to be a nun. Mm. It is becoming more acceptable socially to be religiously unaffiliated.
Yeah.
If I'm a stranger, and I called you up on the phone and said, hello, I'm calling from the Pew Research Center, and it's 1979, and I ask you about your religion, you might well feel obligated to tell me that you're Catholic, or that you're Protestant, or that you're Jewish, because you were brought up that. You don't go to church very often. Maybe religion isn't that important to you, but I guess I'm Catholic. I guess I'm Protestant. You don't want the interviewer to get the wrong impression of you, right? You don't want to give them a bad impression. Today, if I call you up, maybe it's not so normative anymore. Maybe there's not as much social pressure to say that you are religiously affiliated. That I've thought that for a long time. But one of the things that your remarks made me think about that hasn't crossed my mind as much is that maybe it's not just the case that it's more acceptable to say you're none, to say you have no religion, but maybe now there's actually, for some people, a negative connotation to saying you're religious. Maybe it's not just that it's normative to say you're Protestant or Catholic, but now not only is it okay to say you're not one of those things, but to say that might give the interviewer the wrong impression. I don't know, you know, but that may well be. As polarization takes place and sort of this sorting out takes place, tensions grow greater. That, you know, that may well be part of what's going on. I think that's interesting.
Well, one of the sources that both of these gentlemen have quoted is Robert Putnam and David Campbell's book called American Grace, which I commend to you. And in there, as Greg pointed out, that they offer that religion is too associated with right-wing politics. One of the reviewers of that book, though, that I remember well, said they didn't quite point out that it was left-wing politics that caused people in the mainline to help speed up mainline decline. So I think I'd like to ask both of these gentlemen, could it well be that just politicization of faith, either right or left, that takes away the central message of the gospel, confuses everyone, and causes people to say, oh, I'm not going to a liberal mainline church, and I'm not going to a right-wing church. All it does on Sunday morning is talk about the next election. Gentlemen, do you agree with me on that?
Yeah, I think, and Putnam might as well, because he talks about, in his book, one shock and two counter, what does he call them?
Aftershocks.
Yeah. Two aftershocks. So one shock is really the questioning authority of the 1960s, okay?
Right.
Where you had the breakdown of consensus of belief in institutions and values and a time of great foment, okay? The first aftershock to that was actually the conservative reaction to that, where you had the growth of evangelicalism and a lot of and the growth of conservative political activism in reaction to what was regard to the disorder and decline, the social decay and disorder of the 1960s. Mm-hmm. And then the second aftershock he talks about was the broad reaction to that model of social engagement mm-hmm. as being angry and partisan and narrow, particularly starting in the 1990s, where you had a significant number of people that would put themselves in this category. If that's religion, I don't want anything to do with it. Mm-hmm. So I think that he does describe something that fits this. But a lot of that can be put in a much broader context of the culture wars that have broken out in the last 50 years in America, where a broad consensus was questioned by both sides, and you now have a much more partisan and polarized set of arguments in our public life. So, when John Kennedy ran against Richard Nixon, they were not discussing abortion. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it was not part of the debate. And it certainly allowed for a greater diversity there on both sides of the political debate. My mother supported John Kennedy. My father supported Richard Nixon and came from similar backgrounds. That's become harder over time. Another key thinker in this area that I would just mention is John Green
at University of Akron.
University of Akron, who analyzes a lot of this data. And so, he talks about the big shift that's taken place over this period, this same period, by which these measures of religious seriousness indicate partisan affiliation with greater and greater reliability in larger and larger numbers of communities, but not in all communities. So, to give you an example, in the Catholic community in America, which was dominated by ethnic democratic politics, the intensity of your belief, the number of times you go to church a week, the number of times you pray and everything, they did not indicate what your partisan affiliation would be, mm-hmm. okay? If you were a strong Catholic in New York City, you were part of, involved in machine politics, you supported the Democratic mayor or you did whatever. But Catholics have increasingly over this same period adopted the same model that Protestants have generally been on, which is the more intense your religious conviction, the more likely you are to support Republican candidates. Mm-hmm. And that's a huge shift. I think it reflects some of these trends that we're talking about that encourage polarization. Now, just that's not true of the African American community in America. That's still the exception. Religious intensity does not make you more Republican in that. It's not true of the Jewish community, I don't think.
Much less true.
Much less true. Mm-hmm. But it's been true of Protestants for a long time in America. And by the way, the people neglect the fact that the backbone of until relatively recently of religious engagement within the Republican coalition was the mainline church, not mm-hmm. evangelicals. That's mainly, and that's still largely true in many parts of the country. It's not, but Catholics were very different and have become much more like Protestants, and so conservative Catholics tend to vote Republican.
Yep.
Greg, has anybody written? And I just put the data aside for a moment. Has anybody written a definitive essay or book about why people now feel more free to say, mm-hmm. I'm a nun? Whereas, as you suggested, maybe 20 or 30 years ago, they were mm-hmm. something generic. Mm-hmm. I mean, is it the rise of the popularity of the new atheist books that have given mm-hmm. people confidence to say, I'm not any one of these? Has anybody written mm-hmm. an explanation of the nuns?
Mm-hmm. Probably the best one that I'm familiar with is the one we've been referring to, Putnam and Campbell. And I think that they do a good job of explaining how and why religion has become associated in the popular imagination. This is setting aside you know, the actual level of involvement of organizations, but in the popular imagination with right-wing politics. I think that that is, I think that's the best one that I'm aware of.
Okay. And Michael, you suggested in your comments something about why we should not forget history. And for those of us in the conservative Protestant tradition who believe very much in revivals and awakenings occurring, wouldn't it be nice if we had on this panel a historian of revivals and awakenings who could say to us, well, the cultural preconditions that were there at the time this awakening occurred in Wales, you would have never thought it was coming. There just was no hope. And I know your pastor here knows the subject as well as anyone. But Michael, have you reflected on that? In other words, is one thing about the Christian faith, among many things, is that we're always hopeful. And revivals and awakenings give us hope that even with the rise of the nuns, it might be a fertile seedbed for real missionary work.
Yeah, I wish I was a historian on this. I think Rodney Stark and some others have written books on the churching of America, you know, kind of talking about how America, how the rise of religious affiliation in America and this assumption was not always there. It was actually a cultural creation over time in American history. The thing that's now declining was created somehow. You know, I think that a lot of these historians would tell you that these movements don't necessarily proceed just because of massive new conversion sometimes. They actually take place because of fertility within these communities. Okay, it's one reason Mormons do quite well, and if you talk to someone like Tim Keller, he will tell you it's not, you know, going out and getting religious switching from other things, from other communities. It's often the dominations that are growing are building new churches in new areas. Okay. And people start to attend because they want to be more affiliated. They're not necessarily out there converting people from other traditions. And, you know, Keller will tell you that growing churches are the ones that are building new churches in new areas. And one of the reasons the main line has not been growing is because they're not building new churches in new areas. So this is, I think it's a complex dynamic. It's not just mass revivals where you're getting millions of people coming to faith, okay? There are kind of deeper sociological things. But I'm not enough of an expert, so I don't...
Well, one thing that I would offer on this question is that, and one of the reasons that I really shy away from trying to make any predictions is that if you just look at the data we have on hand, there is, I don't think, any reason to assume that the growth of the nuns will continue apace. I mean, maybe it will. I'm not here to say it won't. But there are two big factors working against that. Number one is, and this was hinted at in one of the slides that I showed, is that many people who are raised outside of religion or with no religion ultimately do become religious, many people. Mm-hmm. In fact, the retention rate, if you think of it as that, for the nuns is among the worst retention rates of all religious groups in the United States.
That's hopeful.
I think it's really interesting. They are the biggest winner in the process of religious switching, despite the fact that they have among the worst retention rates. The reason that is because even though they lose so many people, they are more than offset by the people who are leaving religion. So, but whether or not that will continue, is hard to say. And the fact that there's a very large number of people who are raised without religion who ultimately become religious could serve as a brake on the growth of this group. The other thing is fertility. Fertility and demographics more broadly, you know, nuns do have fewer children than people who are religiously affiliated. And even more broadly, you know, when you think about demographics and all the dynamics that go into these things, you have to take immigration into account. You know, and many immigrants coming to the United States, most immigrants, you know, immigration to the United States is having the effect of reinforcing the religious character of the country. And, you know, it's very, like I say, none of this is to make any predictions, but it's also to say we shouldn't look at the past and at the growth of the nuns and just assume that that's going to continue apace. There are other forces that suggest that we should be careful about assuming that that's just going to continue to happen.
Two random kind of reactions to that. One of them is I've tried to make the argument that particularly social conservatives in America that are on the wrong side of some of those issues that relate to the nuns, their only path to political relevance is by building political coalitions with ethnic groups in America that generally share socially conservative views, particularly the Hispanic community. And the forces, for example, within the Republican Party that want to break those connections are, in fact, dooming social conservatives to social irrelevance. They're not going to be able to win on these issues without building alliances with new Americans who are much more likely to share traditional values on these issues. So I think that's a serious political implication. On the other issue, I would just say that, you know, when it comes to dealing with this over time, I think it's quite possible that you're going to see, you know, lifetime variations on some of these, you know, you see in some measures, not in other measures, but variations over people's lifetime as they enter different stages of life, okay, when it comes to religious affiliation. The problem there is that's always been true, and if you start at a higher level, it means that, you know, even if you have some increase in religiosity, you still have a changed social circumstance. And, you know, this current generation is maybe, you know, the figure's better, but maybe twice as secular as the baby boom generation, okay? And so they will work out their lifespans, perhaps becoming more religious, maybe having more children or things like that, but at a but the level will be quite different in America. And so, you know, it's a... So I think even if we hope for changes, there are changes that are taking place from a different benchmark, which, you know, means that we're going to have this for a long time, so...
But I'm hopeful enough to say that I'd like to invite all of you here in 6 years to see Greg's charts on the decline of the nuns.
Right.
Would you agree to do that, Greg?
Absolutely.
Am I right, Michael or Greg, that if Rick Warren or Tim Keller were here, they would say that a lot of the people that are joining the church are formerly unaffiliated people who have said, actually, I need more in my life, and I've heard about your church, and I think I've heard Rick Warren say that a lot of people that had joined Saddleback were unaffiliated people they found in the neighborhood, and no one had ever invited them to church. And they went around and did surveys and said, well, we're new, we're here. And have you heard any of that anecdotally, Michael?
Yeah, certainly. And I don't think it's just anecdotal. I mean, when you look at the role that religious institutions play in creating community,
right?
Okay. And all these things about giving and voluntarism, we'd like to think it's for theological reasons, okay? It's not theology that determines this. You know, Putnam talks about religious affiliation as a supercharged form of friendship, okay, by which you're in an institution where people are asking you to do things, where you are, you know, in a context where you've got opportunities for altruism and all this. And so, you know, I think that that's one thing institutions offer. I mean, community offers.
Yeah.
And so, you know, when Tim Keller plants a church in a new suburban area, okay, with a lot of people, it's not necessarily that you're having... you know, Jonathan Edwards type revivals, you know, with people coming up to the anxious seat and things. You're having people that are pretty atomized and sometimes, you know, not very satisfying community life,
that are invited to come to a place where they find meaning, purpose, and roles. And it's not just religious institutions that do that, by the way, but it seems to be a particularly effective form of community and involving people. So I do think that that's part of the appeal. So
I agree, and I also agree that it's not merely anecdotal. That is absolutely borne out in the data. You see it in the number of people who say that that I was raised unaffiliated, I had no religion, and then later became part of a faith. The one caution I would just offer, and this is a mistake that some of my Catholic friends sometimes make, is that you have to keep in mind that people who join, people who become part of a group, people who come in, are only one side of the story. There's an entry and there's an exit. My Catholic friends often point out, you're picking on, I get this from my own family, you're picking on Catholics. Why are you picking on Catholics? Our retention rate's pretty good. Two-thirds of everybody who was raised Catholic is still Catholic. That is quite good. That's as good or better than most religious groups. The difference is, for Catholics, unlike some of the Protestant churches, is that even though there's not a greater number of people going out the back door, there's almost no one coming in the front door. So this is always a two-sided equation. Every group has people coming in and leaving, and how they wind up, where they come out at the end, is the product of both of those things. It's the ratio of those joining to those leaving, and that's the problem that the nuns have. They lose, they gain a lot of people, but that doesn't mean that they're not at the same time losing others who are joining churches like those.